The Yearns are gone now about the coal mines.
This is a story of work and hardship. 230 men from the Erigna coal mines on strike for a five-day week and better pay.
The mining is over for the boy, Lanny was saying.
Men from Drumcairn, Tarman, Drumshambo, Erigna.
In the Erigna area, there's a lot going that I work with. And even down here in Tarman too and on Drumcairn, they're going fast.
Men damaged by coal dust and work.
And some of them dying fairly young too, going in the early 60s.
Slave labour, some call it still. Poking coal in low seams, hauling coal in hutches.
The miner has a fair amount of dust, God. And if he gets rock dust, his health gets very bad if he gets rock dust. Gets onto the lungs, there's no shift in it.
You can see the damage in the men's bodies.
Coal dust isn't too bad, you know.
You can hear it in their voices. What age were you, Tommy, when you started to work?
Well, I was just gone 15 years.
At the time of the strike, Tommy Groughton and his younger brother Phil Joe were giants
in
the landscape.
So I was happy enough with it. I liked the work all right. I liked it all right. And
legendary for their strength, for the speed of their work.
I believe you were a hard worker.
Well, I was, that's right. I was a hard worker. And my brother as well was a very hard worker.
Phil Joe.
Aye, Phil Joe. He was great altogether.
Outside his home in Falchie, Tommy was a shadow
what
of that younger man,
Tommy,
alone in the fine two-storey farmhouse in the hills looking down over Loch Allen.
With the pneumatic peak for like a year. That's working off the compressor with compressed air.
He leant on the stone wall, his small body bent.
Later years we were with the machine again. When the roof would be suitable, you'd meet the roof bad at times.
His big hands like talons,
for the mission.
Ingrained with soil and the marks of labour.
Throw it out to the drawer done the rest with it.
And what kind of tonnage now would ye have moved in a day?
Well, I suppose 10 and 12 ton of your 12 or 14 years of coal wall. It went out and went to the pit head and was weighed as it was coming out.
And would there have been many men able to to bring out as much in a day as yourself and Phil Joe?
Well, there would. Oh, there were some great workers. Oh, there were great Erigna men, there was great workers. Oh, very, very hardy.
Was it hard work, Tommy?
Well, when you got used to it and got skilled, it wasn't that hard, that came middling easy to you. But the seams in Erigna was all shallow. They were mostly all from 17 to 21 inches. You were lying on your side now, lying on the sit rock, as they said, and the roof touching over your shoulder. So,
were you ever afraid in it?
Well, you would at times, like if you thought the roof was bad, but if you had plenty of pillars and keep it well pillared up, you could live it safe enough now, I think.
How was your... Did you get coal dust at all?
Well, I did, and even in the lash foil, I feel it now a bit. Oh, you have... Everyone that walked in it has a certain amount of dust. Some, as they went by, if they got rock dust, oh, it comes very severe on your health. When you get a flu or a cold, your hair getting out of it. But we done a file at the rock, at the museum tunnel too, myself and my brother, boarding the rock and blasting it. Oh, there was plenty of dust there. Plenty of it. So my brother passed away in the last few years. I walked in plenty of wet conditions too, with drip from the roof spilling down at you. Sometimes you had to wear oilskins.
That's 40 years is a lifetime.
I know it is. It's a good foil, all right, it is. It's a good foil to be in out of the daylight.
Tell me then, there was a strike, wasn't there? Well, I suppose there were several strikes over the years, but... There was one,
the strike was long, bitter and divisive. Some men, like Tommy Groughton, were at first reluctant to remember.
4 months. But the story came back, fragmented.
Well, I suppose I did, but I surely was in that. I was working long before that. I was surely off with that strike. But I just can't remember it right now, would you believe it? I know some of them did go on. There was one, I think, went on a couple of months, all right.
Peter McNiff is a guide in the mining museum in Arigna, where the Graltons bored the rock.
Which is better to have fear in you, because if you decided, you know, I can't care, couldn't care, you just didn't prop enough, and you then would definitely get hurt.
And where you get some faint idea of what working conditions were like.
Of an night home from work at night, the men were still cutting coal, and I was a long journey from here, many miles, and I could have, I'd be having a little cup of tea at home or getting something to eat. I could see the lights blinking every time that the machine would change, the jibby gets stuck on the rock, the whole thing would stick, and you had to keep turning the motor to get the jibby off the rock, and the lights in the house at home would go down every time, and the whole valley. The lights go down real yellow and come up again when he chopped. He was forcing the motor to get the jib off the rock.
Peter, listen to the water there dripping and coming down the sides. Was that constant for you when you were working?
At the coal face, you were releasing water, new water every time. So water be dripping in a mine. If you just stopped for any second that there was no noise going on or an idle time, all you'd hear was water. Water all the way. We had smaller tunnels, and it didn't make as big an impact because it's fallen less of a distance. But in the main tunnel, for it to be higher, you'd hear it much better. But in a working mine, during the working day, no matter how much water was falling, you wouldn't hear it because the noise of men shoveling, hutches on rail track, only in the late hours of night. Also in the mountains in Arigna, we took out the coal seams and we extended the tunnels with explosives and we packed the stuff back that we blew down in place of the coal to get rid of a number one behind the little wooden props called the pillars that held up the seal and packed it back behind them. And basically, that packing was tightened by the mountain coming down slowly. And roughly, we were told from the people who followed up very closely, not from us as workers, that it came down almost 50% of whatever height the seam of coal was. And in that process, in the late hours of the night, near the coal face, if there was silence and if the coal cutter wasn't recutting, to hear the mountain coming down, the cracks of the rocks, the timbers breaking as they were being bent by the weight of the mountain, and actually the bits falling off the ceiling, chips out the joints falling, and actually it was very frightening. It was one of the things, see, in the daytime the same thing was probably happening, but because of the noise, you didn't hear it. But only in the later silent part from 12 o'clock onwards, if the coal cutter was operating, that's the hours they operated cutting coal from 12 o'clock until morning to recut the coal when everybody was gone home. That was the system.
I was as near to being killed several times. Just I don't know how, it was God saved me in a well, but I had to stay very near once though. And a neighbour of ours over there, Charlie Gaffney, just a grand young lad, and he was walking around the place just above me.
This is my uncle, Michael Guihan, Mickey Curley.
The door came in and Jesus come up. He said, Charlie Gaffney, he's after getting his held to show.
He was one of the main strike leaders.
He took me to Frank Early and Paddy McManus was there too. And there's a big lump where he used a bullet of a stone. I know he's only young and small, and it just fell on his head. I thought he was knocked out, he was gone. And we had to bring, no, we only bring him out in a hutch, out and down the mountain. And I thought he was dead. And he was left below on the pit head for 3 or 4 hours in an open fucking shed, lying on a door, waiting for the doctor and an ambulance. They never even notified the father or mother. I woke up to work, I had to tell the father. I thought he was going to die, and he was 8 days semi-conscious after. He never was the same after. Never was the same. Never was. Oh, no, it was a dog rope. It was rough. You were on your own once you were there. You were on peace work from the 3-1. Just that your comrades helped you out and that was it.
The men worked on a peace rate.
There was nothing else for you at the time. In fact, it got worse because the work got
paid for how much coal they cut or drew in a day.
But Brahim, they are fixed in 1958, and yes, sure they killed the best of them. Their fix was fucking deadly. big heavy air trick and an old cable load, and you were in piece work, cutting so much a ton. And all old air tricks. And you got those old dust and fumes and no smoke off the lodge, yeah. They were the air tricks killed the best of me. Did. Like there were some got used to handy at them, but yeah, there was more men, you know, that never got on to them, and so they didn't get the knack of them, and they were kind of working against the grain, and Jesus Christ, it was slave labour, though. I mind the priest come in to me, and Frankie here, they was it, who were cutting coal, and he was from Alaska or somewhere. And we're lying down on the rock, and I said, oh, pure damp, old bit of mat on it. And he said he was in Alaska, and he said he never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like the conditions. So, brutal. When you put on your clothes in the morning, you wouldn't see a shower of dust. How the clothes dried to the fire the night before. So when we start first, it was all hand-picked.
The mines were owned and run by the Leydens, Vincent machine, and Micho. The Leydens also ran the shop in Rigna.
The side is up here in our mountain, but I used to, that was the first job you got drawn. Mm. And then when you were a few years of that, you got cutting. Mm.
What was the drawing like? You had a
hutch? You had your hutch and a wood, an awful fucking job. Low roads and broken timber, and Christ, maybe you might have your back and you hit it and take a scab off it, and you have about 600 or 700 in your hutch now. That was
600 or 700 weight,
yeah.
And then when was the first strike in the pit? Vincent drove a Mercedes. I don't remember what car Micheál had. The men rattled to work on the back of an open-topped lorry.
They used to divide and conquer. You know that kind of way. They had a lot of old latchikos that was carrying news and going to the back door, and that was.
And then, Mickey, the big strike in 1968. How did that start?
We had a claim in that about the 5 day week, and they were looking for a rise on the 5 day week, and the news was coming to a head, and because the picture out to one or two of the drawers in Rock Hill, and they pulled out an unofficial, and they came. We were on this mountain, and so they came up in the following Monday morning and picked it our route, and we went home, and that was the 11th of November, that was the start of it. So it went from that until February. How did? And the priest took sides in it too.
So hardship.
Oh, I don't do lots of hardship. Well, lots of hardship, and there was very few rewards, so there was. And there was, they had no value, I mean, more than a dog, not a bit, sure. Only a number. And
my godfather, Charlie Smith, was a firesman, a foreman in the mines. He worked on while the men were out, faced their hostility. He lives half a mile from my uncle, but they're worlds apart.
And then I had another place I was after the machine, and we hauled out on old workings, and it was full of water. And the water came gushing in, and I was nearly drowned it. So, I had them, but you wouldn't pass much more to me. When you get out, But I was in the whole lot of it, I was 44 years in it. And I suppose it's just time for me to leave it at that.
And when you say you were firesman, Charlie, what did that involve?
That involved the run of the whole place.
So a kind of foreman?
A foreman, yeah. In
You meet some grand fellas, and some fellas very comical and humorous, and then you could meet. You could meet. I could name him now if I. Oh no, that would be here too far away.
But I suppose some people didn't like being told what to do or asked to do.
Some people wouldn't like, and some people would. Meant what they were doing, well, no matter what they were doing it right. Rows were a common thing. There was some people would walk out. Couldn't start about anything. And the smallest of things. There was hardly a day. A row in some part of it. Some of them was in the union and some of them wasn't. And some of them wouldn't join the union no matter what. But for myself, I was 44 years and I never was in the union. When I got to be foreman, you wouldn't be taken in the union anyways. It was the worst job I've ever had. Everybody was at you about something and come at you in the pub and here and there, and I got fed up with it, and I, in the latter end, I put my bag on my shoulder and I went out, walked out of it. The long strike, it was 27 weeks. An ugly strike, there was ugly things done, and I was held up several times going to work, but I went to work. There were pickets. There was all the men in the rig. There was on a picket. Wow, one time I went, and from Tyarman too as well. But I didn't pass a bit of marks. So I carried on. 20 days. Because you knew well that there were some of them teetotally against you. I used to push the care as well as I could to push it through them. And finished up they called a halt to it, and they were looking for a five-day week. And they were entitled to a five-day week. They were on a six-day week, and they were entitled. And I think they were entitled to it. But it was the leading's fault that we wouldn't give them the bloody extra. And they'd be in the pocket of the rest.
So you agreed with what they were looking for, even though you didn't.
I agreed, but I couldn't. I couldn't say that. You see, I'd lose my job, and I did. It couldn't be a big loss.
And did many men go on working through that time?
There did five or six. And in fact, all them 5 or 6 I did too. I'd say they were kind of forced into it, or they wouldn't. No, they weren't. And then there were young men, young lads, you know, that they just didn't know right what it meant to the strike. And
there was a good deal of bitterness out of that, wasn't there?
There was a good deal of bitterness. And it's only very lately that it settled down. And to be upcashed. Well, when I was there and I was stuck in it, I was glad I stuck to my principal surely. But since that, I'm sorry for having nothing to do with the wins. But I wouldn't go back no road. If I could do it all again, I would not go to the pits. No, it's the last thing I think about doing. I was delighted the day I left it.
And when the men went back to work in 69, Charlie, after the strike, were they hard with you, or did you find it hard to work with them after?
Well, in fact, no, they didn't. No, there was some of them. There was some of them that, in fact, that some of them have been me the time of day since. But the fellas that worked along with me, they had never passed me to Mars.
And was there any bad feeling in the pubs or around socially?
There was occasionally. Occasionally there was. And get an odd dig here and there. Pass no heed of it.
When the mining museum opened, it opened up old memories. Scars for some families who'd never known the extent of the hardship and suffering in the pits.
We've seen some hurt with people here from the... We had to think about how they're... We've seen people so upset inside that we didn't know what to say to them. We felt upset ourselves with it because there were people we knew about thinking about for their husband had to walk in the water and the narrow spaces and the way that his health had broken down and that he never told them, you know, that it was so difficult and that. But, like, it was just mining, really, like, you know, and it was... something that was there for always and it had never changed. Some mines wouldn't be as wet as others and some mines would have better ceiling than others and, you know, you'd have all those things, but if you're in a difficult, very weak ceiling and a very wet mine, you really had an awful hard time in it. But the feeling of people, the feeling of people for thinking back on their husband, which they never seen where he worked. They heard about it in some detail, but to see it really hurt them. We've seen a lot of tears here in the early years with members of families who are ex-miners and had passed away. We never thought that might happen. The day we opened and the first time we came to people, that wasn't in our mind that we would see that happen, you know, but it was real. It was real. It was hurt, you know. Anybody, a mother of the children, when they've been with the youth girls, you know.
When we were up there in Lynch's, now there was old workings there with men that men worked in a generation or two before us. So in certain spots we went out onto the old workings, and the tunnels that were driven in that time were very low, just that a man could move on his hands and knees. So the amazing thing about it, we could see the tracks of the trolleys they used. They were called breast carts. They were really boxes with two skids on the bottom to run along the rock. And there was a rope harnessed in that they tied onto it and put it round their shoulder, and they were able to pull it along. Some of them had tracks of it to their grave with them where it cut into them, you know. So
Tom Fallon from Drumcarran, who led the strike with Michael Guihan, knows his history. He remembers with quiet passion what the men were striking for and why they were right to strike.
I just wrote them down this morning as I thought of them, you know. And sure, I suppose we had our differences, but there was a great camaraderie and all that, you know, for the most part. So now, these were the main issues that were there staring us the whole time. And the problem we had with any of these issues, that the company had the knack of saying, we'll give you sixpence a ton more and forget about the conditions. Well, they wouldn't say it, but the meet would take place and that would be through union. So sixpence a ton more or so much on the shift. And we had to put that to the minister. We had no meeting with the clergyman in Arigna, but he did be against us. The best, the others, John Durham, Kieran Durham, Shamrock, Rivoli, the whole Ballyfernan, they stood back at very best. What made us to be able to stick on and made the ladies come to the table finally, I would think, that he got on the pulpit and he said to the women of Arigna, tell your men to be thankful to have a job, go back to it. They came out of the mess and they said, that man isn't interested in our men. And that strengthened up the thing then. Unsung heroes were the women and families behind the men, you know, because they had to try and make ends meet. We were well aware of that. And that is the sadness of a strike, you know. Everybody can do without it, but some more than others now, it has to be said. Some more than others. You have to put down your foot and nod to him, I'm saying. You may lose a bit of money, but you gain a bit of a principle all the same every time, you know, because that company knows that you possibly will do. They won't rub the feet as much in you. If a builder, would say, gets away with it, sure, he'll do the same today. Won't you get work done as cheap as you can? That I always seen it a bit that it's up to the men to stand up and be counted, sort of, you know. You have to do that. I think that you have to get people together and fight for a cause, you know, when you're young and able to do it. And by and large, you'll have a better society and a better country out of it, you know. We're all men now when it's all over.
What started the strike, do you remember, Charlie? I mean, they were looking for a five-day week.
We're looking for a five-day week now.
And Charlie Hopkins from Arigna remembers a lot of what went on at that time.
But a small number of drawers in Rockhill Pit went out on strike over, they were looking for an increase in wages on the ton of coal. And that started an official strike. And of course, Leighton locked us out, so we couldn't go back and work the time for work the length of time that was needed to make the strike official. So we ended up with an unofficial dispute.
What age were you then?
I was 19 at that time, and I was the spokesperson for the drawers at the time. You know, I remember clearly the night that the two boys were sent back, and there was about 7 or 8 of us, and I would have been great mates with the Lynch's lads. And we made them, and we were standing down the corner, probably in the store, and he slammed the door, and we could hear the bang of the door. That's it, that they were going to go back. But they knew they had the damage done, because he was hoping that for years before that, I suppose for 20 years before that, the place had been racked with unofficial disputes. You know, we never had a proper official strike. And then you'd have lads breaking the strike and going back to work and all that sort of carry on. And he knew that. It was history repeating itself. We had a big march to Carrick and Shannon, a lot of publicity, and the ESB intervened at that time to offer an increase to the ladies, and they in turn then were able to give in to some of our demands, not them all, no, but some of them anyway.
But you got the five-day week.
We got the five-day week at that time, and a lot of controversy. We had a local priest in Arigna who went against the strike and even interfered and had what was called, or termed at the time, a housewife's ballot. And he preached on the altar that if the men didn't go back to work, the women should not cook their dinner or do anything for them. So the ballot was issued to the women in the church, and was returned to them, and he called a meeting, and I remember on a Sunday evening, and he had his ballot, but...
And what way did that ballot go?
The ballot was put into a bucket and was burnt, and never was counted at all. And that was the beginning of the end for the priest as well. Because when the strike was over, he looked for monies to do some renovations on the church, and he got no response. So the bishop moved him on.
He got his answer.
He did.
And did he accuse the men of being communists?
Oh, he did. He read from the altar that we were communists. And it was at the, there was two masses in the Rigna at that time. There was one at 8 o'clock and then one at 11. And a number of us had heard about it because he had said it at first mass. So we decided if he said it at second mass that we'd walk out. We were the young lads, and there was Jogan Martin and John Peck and McManus and Johnny the Clyde Guihan and Seamus Gilooly and myself and a few more. So we, it was serious stuff because there was no money to be had at all at the time.
And that march then to Carrick, Charlie, do you remember that?
Oh, I do indeed, I do indeed. And I remember there was a few people trying to prevent it, but it didn't happen. But it got great publicity. And at the Champa Vocational School, Father Griffin was the headmaster, and he had the flag at half-mast. And then at Leithman Village, there was a local shopkeeper, Eddie Guihan, who was down in Terman. And Eddie had cramery cans of tea and sandwiches, and, you know, it was...
Did some men continue to work then while the strike went on?
Oh, they did. Now, that was the saddest part of it, I suppose. Vincent Layden, I suppose, thinking that he was helping, got a group of men to go back to work. They were mostly from the Terman area. And then the lorry drivers were from Arigna. But... that was resisted greatly. I remember we went down to the power station. I remember a fellow called Coyle, John Coyle, I think it was, and he lay in front of the lorry, you know, had his head right up to the wheel. And the driver was going to drive, but the guard stopped him. And I can see his head just under the front of an old EAC truck. And the driver revving the truck like it was, you know, it was awful dangerous stuff now. The guard, eventually, Vincent Aiden was there too. And the guards told him, you better back off, because you're not going in here. Nobody could. All we had was placards, you know, scabs go home, you know, whatever. Sort of makeshift placards. We all give them the message in writing and I was shouting at them. Yeah. I can remember the feeling of hatred that we had, you know, that these colleagues of ours would do such a thing.
After you all went back to work then, did you talk at all to any of the men who broke the strike? Did you ever talk to them?
We'd have met them in dance halls, but they weren't afraid to go to the dance halls. You know, they were young fellas and they were afraid to go out for years, I'd say, afterwards. And I remember at the Rangers Road that took place, no, I wasn't at the dance. Down at Dunkirchen, there was two of the lads were seriously injured. And that was all over the strike. See, there weren't more colleagues of ours either. We had a different, no lad on our side, apart from a couple of the lorry drivers, and we gave them lots of shtick for long enough, you know, called them scabs and all that, you know.
Do you remember the day you went back to work?
I do. Vividly now. As I say, when the strike, the unofficial strike, we were about 6 months in Rockhaven Pit, and we were on an air pick run. But we were working in bad conditions as well, you know, and very hard, cold. It was just cold that wasn't viable to take out of the cold cutting machine. So we had a foreman there that wasn't that nice, but he was a pure dog, a pure dog. He gave the men dog's abuse, you know. But that wasn't a nice period. Working for that fellow now, that's why I went to America out of the air. I got away for 12 months and was glad to get away from it. But I know that there was tremendous animosity up on Lynch's Mountain. There was war up there. It created a lot of bitterness and it was a bad feeling and ill feeling. And it divided neighbours and even cousins split. Sort of serious. Have you talked to Michael Guihan, has he?
We have, yeah, we talked to him.
What form is he, you know?
Not bad, you know. He said he wouldn't set foot in the museum.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wouldn't have much. It's not telling its own picture. In the first place, it's not a genuine museum. It was an old rock tunnel, and we never had coal mining the way that coal mining was done, you know. But they're just, it's a camouflage job, so we wouldn't see it as an authentic thing at all. Well, that's maybe why I didn't want to say that, but you know, it's as well to see it. I don't want to be running the down, it's bringing in tourists, and if it is, good luck to it, you know. But there's a lot of now fantasy.
So, you saw people crying in here.
We've seen people so hurt when they seen the reality of the place for men and to walk, it's really, really were. Because, like, it's understandable, like, the mines weren't suitable for people to visit, like, with the lower tunnels and the ceiling problems and all, like. So it was only kind of my experience coming to life and brought back the memories of the many ways of mining, of people at the mine, like.
Thanks very much.
Pleasure. As you leave the museum, you see photos, some of the history of the area, many of the characters, musical history, social history.
That's Paddy Mac's wife, Betty McManus, and that's Betty's sister, that's Sean Wynne's sister down here, that's Sean's Suzanne, that they call him, the sister there.
Some of the miners, named and unnamed.
Just having a bit of fun with them. But they're just some of the realities there. There's a photograph of the strike there.
And in a corner, almost hidden away, a small memory of that 68-69 strike.
Tom Fallon, Johnny Clyde. There's a bit on it there at the bottom. It was, I'm not sure, the 12 mile march to Carrick and Shannon.
Better
working condition, 1969, yeah. That's just
a Rigna miner strike for 5 day a week.
Trying to get from Johnny Clyde, Tom Fallon. Just not getting this. John Jacullen of Shamba. And, I know his face, but I can't.
Well, actually, we have him here. Paddy McMorrow, Joe Gilmartin, John P. McManus, Joe Cullen.
Joe Cullen.
Michael Guihan. Joe Smith. John Guihan. Tom Fallon.
That's it. You have them showing you there.
On the march.
How was the strike settled?
Bits of everything.
The way it was done then. Politicians putting pressure on. The ESB giving more money to the owners for the coal.
That's right.
The men getting their 5 day week. And slightly improved pay.
And the government got the ESB to increase the price of coal to the company to cover the cost. That's the way it is. And then the problem with coal was so dear, the ESB wanted to close it because the coal was so dear on them. So the coal, they were paying £68 a tonne for coal here in Rigna at the time. They were buying American coal at £27 a tonne below in money pint for the station delivered. So there was, it was the strikes, the increases were given.
You were saying that Miles McPadden, who was a great wit, that he had a few good lines about the mines.
Oh, he said the mines was kind of like purgatory. It was, you suffer for a time before you go to America. I know a lot of the workers in the coal mines, they pulled out after a while and went to America.
Back in Tarman, and 3 days before he dies, Tommy Gralton begins to remember more about that strike.
Did yourself and Phil Joe and a few more men from around, did you work part of that time through that strike? Was there a...
Oh, I know there was a strike that the company kind of forced us, would we go out and work? There was the Pick 12 and forced them, would they go ahead and do bits of work? Work on, but... After a couple of weeks, there was a settlement granted, and we were back with the rest again. And going out during the strike and all that, well, it was bitter for a while, but it went off after a while. Time healed it off. It came to an end, the bitterness and all that.
And was it some of the ladies then who wanted the 12 men to...
Oh, it was. They picked out 12 out of it. And asked us, would we try and go to work and break up the strike. But we agreed and did go. But they weren't keen to work with us now, the ones that went out during the strike. For a foil.
So again, Tommy, I was saying it was only, whatever I say, a lad about 8 or 9, but I remember the hard old things being said at the time
about some of the men like yourselves who did go into work, you know, and I wasn't that the word scab being used, you know. But and did anyone ever say anything like that to you, or was it?
They did. They would call you scab at the time when you followed on and breaking up the strike. Oh, you get that title surely, but it didn't stay long on it.
At his funeral mass, his old pit lamp and a sod of turf were carried to the altar.
But I know it can vex the rest.
Men who had fought bitterly at the time of the strike stand together, help to dig and fill his grave.
But I know after we done it, it never was done later. That was the end of it too. No one is ever going to bother again to go by a picket.
Tommy, coming back to them times, and it's 40 years ago now since that strike, is hard to believe. But did any afterwards? Did the Leydens ever thank you for?
No, for
what you did.
Okay, no. The same as you done it on your own. They didn't back you up that much. No.
40 years on, there's little to commemorate a strike that scarred a community and altered the balance of power within it. The mines closed, the company wound up, the power station shut, the chimney gone, Vincent Leyden and Micheál dead.
And did you ever say anything back to any of the men who...
I didn't. You couldn't be saying anything back. Because you knew yourself, you were at fault to go by and to go by the picket. You were at fault yourself. There was no one at fault, only yourself, to do it. But you had to put up with that yourself.
Memory lasts as long as it does and is gone.
I know the workers was very vexed about it. The title was going about scab, it was going wholesale. It was. But it'll hardly ever be heard again. With the mining coming to an end, and it'll never be heard around the Regna area again.
Whenever I drive that long, bleak stretch of road from the Galley Bridge towards McCran's pub and the foot of the Regna Road, I picture the line of men walking to Carrick 40 years ago. The windmills turn on the hills over Regna.
I know all the Yardens way back in the pubs. They were all connected to the coal mines. They'd be asking you how you were getting on in the pit and what height was your coal and all this, and it was all the talk about the pits in the area. But the errands are gone now about the coal mines. So the mines has closed and the story has ended.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.